Mal gute Woche. Friede Schmidt Hashem. So, as discussed, we will start learning Megillah Asur Shmidt Hashem. From my experience, well, both in this year and in other shiurim, I usually cover about half the ground I think I'm going to cover in this year, and often that's generous. So I'm going to try to strike a certain balance of focusing on the main things that I want to bring out at the expense of perhaps other things that really would deserve attention, and then maybe coming back to it at the end. Let's see how it'll play out. So Megillah Esrus. Before we actually start learning, let's just talk outside a little bit about what is this Megillah coming to tell us. What is the purpose of this Megillah? It's a story of an individual woman. She became the ancestress of David HaMelech. So perhaps you say that the purpose of the Megillah is to give the background of the Malchus Beis David. Perhaps, maybe that's the purpose. There are probably a number of purposes, but there's a famous saying that they say from Reb Chaim Brisker, when a person is learning a Gemara and is trying to understand some point in the Gemara. So Reb Chaim Brisker said, before understanding why, you have to understand what. Right? I mean, first define exactly what is it in front of you. After that, move toward the why. And he says a lot of times, putting in the effort to explain the what, to understand the what is actually being said here, often takes you beginning of the way, halfway, three quarters of the way, maybe all the way to understanding the why. So let's just understand a little bit of what here. This is a story of a woman, and this is unusual in terms of Nach, not completely unusual, but it's probably the minority of Nach when you have this kind of focus on a specific person's personality. It's a Megillah that spends a lot of time bringing out the midas, the goodness, the emuna of a woman named Rus. We also see the greatness of Naomi here. That's a less usual focus in Tanakh. So again, we're going to avoid why right now. But what we're already seeing here in terms of what, there's a message here. And I want to express that message as follows. We know that there are some things that are concepts in Yiddishkeit, entities in Yiddishkeit. Let's say, for example, we have the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was a building. Well, we know that it's more than a building because we're very busy with the Beis HaMikdash now also. Not just in terms of remembering, but because the Beis HaMikdash is a concept in Yiddishkeit. And it turned into, it's like, it's a value, it's something that we are busy with, even when we don't actually have the physical thing here. Now, there are many things like this. Shabbos is not something physical. It's a value in Yiddishkeit, right? Yom HaBoh, many things that are not tangible things that we have here in this world. What I'm bringing out is that you can have things that began, if we'll put it that way, as something, a tangible, physical thing. So Mikdash was, again, was a building, right? It was a building. And yet, because of the depth behind it, because of what it was all about, even when the building was gone, it remained in its essence, and it is there. Not in the tangible sense, but in the spiritual sense, it's an existing entity. Now, let's still be a little bit abstract. Soon, Bezus Hashem, we'll make our landing as we go along. But I want to bring out, I want to take it a step further. It's not just the Beis HaMikdash. This is true for people also, right? You take Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Moshe, the great people of our past, were people at the time, flesh and blood. And then they were Nifter, after a life of accomplishment, but they put themselves into a place that now they forever remain stars shining in the, we'll call it the firmament of what Yiddishkeit is. Avraham Avinu is an active part of our lives as Jews. He's an active part of the system. Today, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, right? These are now a very integral part of the whole system of Yiddishkeit. Here we're seeing something amazing. Here's an individual woman, because of her sincerity, because of her character, because of her excellence, she went down in Tanakh as a monument forever. And she became what we're discussing. She became what we're discussing. We're not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, who brought the Torah to the entire Jewish people. We're not talking about the others who were the founders of Klal Yisrael. Yes, she was an ancestress of David HaMelech, but there were other ancestors and ancestresses also. Here is a case, a very uplifting example, an elevating example of a woman who, what does Tanakh have to say about her? Yes, the conclusion, the culmination of the story is that she became the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. But the whole Megillah is about this woman's efforts, this woman's dedication, her excellence, her sincerity, her kindness, and it's being established now as an entity in Yiddishkeit. Rus is now a part of the picture of Yiddishkeit, part of the picture of the Jewish people today. What I want out of that is the understanding that this itself is a message to us. Because, Tanakh was finished. Tanakh was sealed. But the story of Yiddishkeit wasn't. And the message that's being conveyed to us here is, don't underestimate the value, the eternal value, the historic value of your individual efforts in the privacy of your own little life. Not every case is going to be inscribed in Tanakh, but every case is being inscribed in the story of Klal Yisrael. And this is something that Chazal make this point. They tell us about a number of different cases of people who made certain extraordinary efforts, people who overcame themselves in different ways. And Chazal tell us that at the time they had no idea. These are cases of people who were in Tanakh, but they had no idea that the pasuk was going to focus on this and that forever what was a very specific incident in their life was now going to become emblazoned on all the rest of the history of Klal Yisrael. Right? It says, for example, about Aaron HaKohen. Right? Aaron HaKohen is, he was the leader of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. He was the man inspiring Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim, etc. His brother was off the scene, long gone. And all of a sudden, Aaron is told, well, the Bnei Yisrael are going to be going out of Mitzrayim. The natural thought would be that Aaron would be the one to lead them out of Mitzrayim. He was the man who was with them through all the difficulty. He was the one who was holding them up, who was elevating them. And he was told, no, it's going to be your brother Moshe. It's going to be your brother Moshe. And Hashem assures Moshe. Moshe was concerned about this. He didn't want to take the job because of the concern that of Aaron, that Aaron would feel slighted. And Hashem tells Moshe, No. Aaron, with his character, he's going to see you and he's going to actually rejoice. He's going to be very happy to see that you got this role. And then it says, Vayitze Aaron l'kos Moshe, he went out to greet him in the midbar, Vayichabek le, Vayinashek le, he hugged him and kissed him. So now, the Chazal bring out, Aaron had no idea what kind of focus this was going to get in the Torah as an example for all of eternity of excellence of character, right? Of a greatness, of personal greatness of a human being. It says, had he realized that, he would have appreciated so much more what he was doing. It says he would have gone out with a whole band, with a whole orchestra to greet Moshe. But he was, at the time, just being himself. He was being himself without realizing quite how much weight that it took up in Hashem's eyes, kiviyachol, and in the story of Klal Yisrael forever. So this is something for us to appreciate, because Hashem's Sefer is an ongoing process. Tanakh is Tanakh, right? That was sealed at the end of Malachi. Fine. But Hashem's Sefer is an ongoing process. And that realization that this is what a Sefer like this brings out, that the individual, in their own private life, is the subject of very intense focus on Hashem's part. And, you know, we often think in terms of Hashem watching us, it's in terms of, are you going to do something wrong? Are you going to do something wrong, right? That's how Hashem is he watching? We have to realize that that is not, of course, Hashem is watching to see whether you do the right thing or the wrong thing, but that's not the focus. That's not the main focus, when you put it that way. The main focus is Hashem getting nachas from his children. Is Hashem getting nachas as he watches us move through the struggles, overcoming them, successes. And this is what Hashem is keenly watching in order to see, because he's getting that nachas, he's getting that nachas ruach, that pleasure, that pride, out of, our individual personal struggles. Ruth at the time was nowhere near center stage, right? Nowhere near the limelight. And yet, all of her personal growth, all the different aspects of it, are being noted by Hashem. And Lemaisa, they become a part of the story of Klal Yisrael. So let's realize that the truth is that this is something ongoing. We can point to people well after Tanakh, who for all of Klal Yisrael became a part of the story of Klal Yisrael. But let's realize that these are just examples, right? These are examples in material terms. You can't have every person on that that list. It's just too much for us to handle, but it's not too much for Hashem to handle. And therefore, ultimately, the Sefer Shaldava, we're told in the, it's part of what it says in the end of Malachi, and Hashem's parting words is the Navi is parting from Klal Yisrael. Hashem says, you got the long gullus up ahead. Here's where we're saying goodbye in terms of Nevuah. Hashem says that as the end of time is approaching, Hashem is busy watching and writing, Everything is being written down. Everything is being recorded. There's a Sefer, Lirei Hashem Olochoshvei Shmoi. That's the Lashon at the end of Malachi. As time goes on, as things are going to get darker and darker and darker, it's going to get more and more challenging to hold on. It says, "Aznid bro yirei Hashem ishul re'ehu, vayakshev Hashem vayishma." It says, as those, the loyal, those who are holding on, the conscientious, are getting together, and they're talking to each other, and they're saying, despite it all, we're going to hold on. It says, Hashem is listening keenly. Vayikosev v'sefer, I forgot the Lashon exactly, v'sefer yirei Hashem olachosh v'shmoy. It's all being inscribed in the Sefer of, of the Yirei Hashem. Hashem is keeping, has his record of the story of his people, of his individuals. So to just look at this Megillah, again, not in terms of why, but in terms of what, this is a message that's coming through clearly. Of the Tinshvei. Why don't the yeshivas learn Navi? That's a big question. I'll only answer it briefly right now. It really deserves its own discussion. There are many important things that they don't learn in yeshivas. Why? Yiddishkeit is packed with important things, very important things. The yeshivas have a specific agenda, and it's not to cover everything that needs to be covered. The yeshivas are setting up a certain training system that's meant to set the person up afterwards to be able to navigate his own course. And therefore, again, I'm saying this very bekitzer right now. This is something that really deserves more elaboration. But the yeshivas are specifically trying to minimize on the items that make it into their curriculum. Why? Because what they're trying to do is convey, impress on the bachurim, your life is your learning. When there are too many boxes, from this hour to this hour is this, from this hour to this hour is that, from this hour to this hour is that, things become a little too boxed in. You lose that sense of it's all day. That's why, okay, well, I'm getting a little bit of a tangent here, but I'll round it off within another minute. The way it's set up is that boys should find time to fit in other important things. But they should do it. Part of the training system is that they should figure out how to fit it in. But what the yeshiva is trying to train in is like Reb Chaim Volozhin has said, when they asked him, what are they doing in your yeshiva? They asked him, what are they doing in your yeshiva? Volozhin. He said, in my yeshiva, they eat and sleep. He said, what? He said, those are the only two things that have distinct times. Other than that, it's only learning. Now, this is why they duck as much as possible, want it to be, you are busy with the core of learning. We don't want to add other things into the curriculum, as important as they might be. Growing Gemara, because that's the basis of it all. And you find where you fit in a little Chumash and a little Halacha. And that's why even Musar, which today is recognized that it's an absolute must, to insert that half hour of Musar was a big battle, and it was a holy battle. Should it or should it not? Because it's a bit of a conflict with the essence of a yeshiva is meant to be. That's, as we say, al regel achas. Okay. So now, having said that, I want to take it a step further. And now you already see why I said before that we're not going to be able to focus on everything, because by the time we get to our Hakadama, we're going to be halfway to Shavuos. But I want to take what we've been discussing a step further. And that is to note, who was Rus? Rus was a girl growing up in Moav, from the royal family, okay, but very, very remote from anything Jewish. I'm talking about before Elimelech moved out there. A girl growing up in Moav. And just what? She had a certain purity to her. Not a certain. She had a very special purity to her, very special sincerity to her. And she was thirsting for truth. She was thirsting for goodness. And she was thirsting for meaning. She had very little to work with. She had very little to work with. Where was she going to get that instruction out of Moav? But this is part of the message we're bringing out. Hashem, you know, we have the big things that are happening in the from world, right? But Hashem, Eini Hashem Shreitut Tois B'Kol HaAretz, sincerity, real dedication, real growth is going to attract Hashem's attention wherever on earth the person might be, whatever his status might be. And Hashem will reach for that person and draw him close. And therefore, as we're going to see, it came about to an unfortunate way. It came about through some people's wrong choices. What did Hashem do? Hashem said, yes, that anonymous girl, as far as Torah is concerned, that anonymous girl growing up in Moav, I'm going to find a way to get to her and to draw her very close to me. There are a few very amazing examples that we see of this. And it's also spending time on this before we actually open the Sefer. Because this, again, is what I see as the what of the story of Rus. Note that that's actually a very, very fascinating common denominator between Rus and her very, very great-grandchild, David HaMelech. What was the story of David HaMelech? Note the parallel there, right? Rus and David HaMelech, they come together on Shavuos, right? A lot of Shavuos is based around the theme of David HaMelech. Sirtzeit, relaying Rus there. David HaMelech was a very similar story. David HaMelech was born Jewish. He was born as part of the fold. He was not born into royalty. In fact, he was born, he grew up as an outcast. Maybe we'll get to that. I'm very big on tangents, in case you haven't noticed. But he grew up as an outcast out in the sheep, very far from the center of where it was happening, where Torah was happening, where greatness was happening, where the story of Klal Yisrael was taking place. David was very, very much out of that picture. He was cast out of that picture. He was despised. But out there by himself, he was connecting with Hashem, and he was growing and growing and growing and growing. Nobody in Eretz Yisrael, with all the great people there, knew what was going on, but there was someone who was actually out there rising above them and above them and above them. But Hashem saw. And again, Hashem brought him in, brought him all the way close. So this is another message. We see this a few times. Right? It's the story of Yisrael. So Yisrael is a bit more proactive. But another amazing example of this is Rachav. Right? Yisrael was proactive. He went out, went to the Midbar, fine. But Rachav, right? Rachav, a Kenani woman who, again, is a young girl, heard all the stories about, and most of Canaan reacted how? They got all nervous, they fell apart, they became hysterical, and then they moved on with life. And here's this one girl who grew up into a woman, and it took 40 years, and she was so lacking direction that she didn't necessarily have a very chash of a profession in terms of Torah. But she had that thirst that she never lost. When she saw, when the whole world was struck with the events of Kriyas Yamsuf and Matan Torah, she was like, if this is the truth, how can I get there? Now she, Yisrael, picked himself up, went to the desert. She didn't have the means of doing that, but she was longing for it. And that longing never faded. So what did Hashem do? Hashem got to her. Hashem got to her and brought her close. So it's this realization that there is the center stage of what's going on in the Klal Yisrael picture. But Hashem's focus is not limited there. And in fact, Hashem's focus is on where is that personal greatness? Where is personal grace? It doesn't have to be among the big names. The big names will have great personal greatness. But it doesn't have to be in the limelight, wherever it is. Hashem will get there and will bring the person close. Now, again, these are models. It won't always work that every sincere person will then become the mother of the king. But Hashem wants to bring out this message that this is about between you and me. Both Rus and David would have been perfectly satisfied with it staying as it was for the rest of their life. They were very fulfilled and happy with where they had gotten themselves before they were moved into the limelight. And this is part of what's being conveyed to us, right, to appreciate that point. And that's why specifically Rus and David, they all come together when we're getting the Torah. Realize that the Torah, when you're receiving the Torah, you are moving into a very intimate, personal. On the one hand, it's all Klal Yisrael together. It's two dimensions. On the other hand, it's a very personal, one-on-one business of me and Hashem. That's why I think we said before Pesach. That's right. That what did Hashem say? Sinai, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, in the singular. Hashem doesn't say it in the plural. And our Sinai, Hashem was addressing each of us individually. Each of us, I say us, us also. We were all there. We're all there, and each of us was being told by Hashem, this is going to become a personal, intimate business between me and you. And our efforts and our own personal level is where Hashem's attention is. So we procrastinated enough. I think I was yet even according to my standards. And now we can, let's move into the safe. So we begin. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually read it, but you'll be fine without a sefer. It just gives me structure, like with our other shiur. So vayhi b'meishvayta shayfti, vayhi ra'av ba'aretz. In the days of the shayftim, there was a famine in the land. And one man left the land of Yehuda, left Eretz Yisrael, to go live in the fields of Moab. We stress that it was in the fields because his intent wasn't to really settle there. He just wanted to temporarily leave the scene until things would be a little better. Elimelech. His name was Elimelech. V'shem Ishtoi Naomi. His wife was Naomi. V'shem Shnei Banav Machlon V'Kilion Ephrasim. And his children were Machlon and Kilion. They were Ephrasim, either means they were from the area of Ephrat, or it's just a way of saying distinguished people. Maybe Yisrach and Yehuda. V'avayu Stei Moav V'yushem. So they came to Stei Moav, the fields of Moav, to be there until the famine would pass. Now, as we know, Elimelech was greatly faulted for doing this. And therefore, we'll move into the next pasuk, and then we'll just briefly address this part of the story. Vayamos Elimelech, Ishnami. Elimelech died there. He had gone there just temporarily until things would pass. He wanted to beat the suffering that was going on in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, he never survived to come back. Now, Naomi and her two sons were left. So, let's just address this briefly. Elimelech, as Rashi tells us, was one of the leaders of the generation. He was a very rich man. And there was too much pressure on him, the famine. Everybody was so poor, there was too much pressure on him, he couldn't handle it, he left. The way Rashi puts it is, he didn't want to be busy with all of the poor people who were demanding his attention, were demanding his support, etc. That, of course, is already reason enough to be able to see why he would be faulty. But I would like to take it to a little bit of a more refined level. Meaning we can assume that it's not just the pshat that he didn't want to share, he didn't want to give anybody anything. At a time like that, it's a very overwhelming time. As rich as a person is, he's just not going to be able to fill the need. And therefore, what happens is that, you know, he might give and give and give and give, but It's just debilitating when so many people are suffering. As much as I might be able to give, it's not going to help. It's not going to help. People can continue to suffer. It's just too much for him to handle. And therefore, he left. He left just to be off the scene. And this is one thing that he's faulted with. Another thing that he's faulted with, the Chazal tell us, which led to his punishment, was the fact that he left Eretz Yisrael. So I want to spend a little bit of time just addressing both of these points. Again, we would like to assume, and this is the Derech HaLimud that I was mekabel, that when it says something like this, it doesn't mean in the literal sense, he wasn't willing to spare a dollar to help other hungry Jews. It's not what it means. It's more subtle. It's more fine. We said you couldn't handle the reality there. But this is a very, very fundamental point also that's being conveyed to us, and that is don't dodge the suffering of the Jewish people. One of the people who is one of the kitas that Chazal say very bad things about, he's basically moved out of a lot of Klal Yisrael, is what we call a pirish midarkei tzibur. Person who's pirish min hatzibur. Person who separates himself from the community. What does this mean? One of the things it means is this, that he, Klal Yisrael is what Klal Yisrael is, but I'm on my own track. I'm not a part of their suffering. I'm not a part of their problems. If I have the ways of getting around it, I'm going to put myself into a different track. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that if he had money, he had to starve. To an extent, it does. But no, there is a din of chayach ha-koymin. If he had the money, of course, he would be expected to share with others, but he would certainly have the right to buy the food he needs, etc. But still, by trying to completely get away from the whole thing, it's going to be just debilitating for me. Okay, it's going to be debilitating for you. But your brethren are starving. You're not starving. They say, what's the point of me staying here? The point of your staying here is to be experiencing the tzara along with them. Even if it's always going to be that way, whenever there's some sort of tzara, everybody experiences it differently. But don't run away from the tzara of Klal Yisrael. Don't run away from the tzara of Klal Yisrael. Here, I just want to bring out a fine point. Again, this does not mean that you shouldn't do what you can to alleviate your own personal suffering. It doesn't mean that I have to make sure that I'm starving also. What it does mean is, don't dodge being a part of what's going on. In the way that it is affecting you, yes, you're a part of the story of Klal Yisrael. Question?
Yeah, basically answered it, but the concept certainly came up in the Shalom for many Rabbani, struggling with, do I escape? And they had means to escape, or do I stay with my people?
So I want to state again that what we're saying here is a concept. It's very, very difficult to apply it practically. Lamai said there is a rule that you are obligated to save your own life, right? Even when there are things like that going on. Now, of course, there's the famous story of Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, right? Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, who was in America at the time, but came back in order to be with his Talmidim, knowing where he was going. But again, that's why I want to leave this on a conceptual level. We'll bring a few examples to question. So this is a point that I want to stress. We're distinguishing between saving your life, right? That's part of the point. The point here is that Boaz that Elimelech didn't need to do this to save his life. He left because he didn't want to be burdened by what was going on. When we're talking about saving a life, those questions of should I save my life or be here, those are from the most weighty questions in the world. And the natural premise would be save your life. And that is not a conflict to suffering with what the Jewish people are going through. Right? And so I said before, there is a din of chayach ha-kodesh. That's why I want to make sure this is a subtle point. But like, for example, the Stipler was in Eretz Yisrael at the time. The Stipler was in Eretz Yisrael at the time while the Holocaust was going on. Didn't move to Europe. And Baruch Hashem, well, Klal Yisrael has to be happy that he didn't, right? But there were a few things that he took upon himself that he certain forms of affliction in order to be suffering along with Klal Yisrael. Reb Chaim Brisker, it's a famous story. When Reb Chaim Brisker was, when he was the Rav in Brisk, there was a big fire, and it consumed many of the houses in Brisk. So he was very, very busy trying to help the people who had lost their homes, etc. All throughout that period, he didn't sleep in a bed, slept on the floor, to be a part of what was going on, to be a part of what was going on. Now, like I said, how do you exactly translate this into Lamaisa? Again, we're bringing out the idea. We're bringing out the concept in order to have the concept. That Klal Yisrael is suffering, I don't want to run away from that fact. It's going to be a burden on me that Klal Yisrael is suffering. I'm a part of Klal Yisrael. On the contrary, in this case, so he wasn't meant to actually suffer starvation, but he was meant to suffer that burden. He was meant to suffer the fact that he has to face it and deal with it all the time. He was meant to suffer the fact that people are looking for him, looking to him for help, and he's not able to help them. To just run away and say, "Well, Klal Yisrael is in trouble, but I can, but I'll be fine." This is something that he was faulted with. So that is point number one. And therefore, I also say in a general way, at the very least, we want to be aware of the sufferings of Klal Yisrael, wherever it might be happening, whatever might be going on, to be aware, to be hurting with it, even if it doesn't necessarily mean so I have to move there and put myself right in the line of fire. Part, to appreciate that part of my tapkid in life, part of my shleimus, part of my mission, is that, is to be functioning as a feeling member of Klal Yisrael. So that's number one. And number two, the other point that we find in Chazal that he was faulted for is the fact that he left Eretz Yisrael. And this is also something that we want to appreciate properly. We do know that one of the reasons that justifies leaving Eretz Yisrael is Parnassa. Right? A person is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Parnassa purposes. What I meant in those days, we have to appreciate that as great as it is now to live in Eretz Yisrael, in those days, it meant something much, much, much more. Not just because of the fact that there was a Mishkan then and there were Karbanas, but in a very practical sense, all of Judaism was in Eretz Yisrael. There were no Jews in Chutzah. It's a little startling when you actually chop that. That moving out of Eretz Yisrael meant you were completely severing association with the Jews. There was no Zoom then either, right? Meant that you are now going to be in an area that is completely empty of Jews. You're living completely on your own. This has the negative aspect and the positive aspect. Living in Eretz Yisrael, and this is really part of what we're planning for when we're really asking for Kibbutz Galus. It's not just about the physical presence in Eretz Yisrael. It's about that reality that all of Klal Yisrael is operating together in one place. Which means that you are drawing off the standards of everybody else. Let's remember that in those days, Klal Yisrael also weren't splintered. Everybody was living with that agenda of intensive avodas Hashem. Of course, the lower people, there were higher people, but there weren't different types and different people and different etc. Everybody was part of the same tzibur. And that tzibur, what characterized that tzibur was avodas Hashem. Status in Klal Yisrael was avodas Hashem. That's where prestige came from. That's what was admired. That was the culture. And this is how Hashem set it up. You have to realize this is a very, very big part of the problem of Galus, which is relevant even in Eretz Yisrael today. That we lack that reality where the whole nation is in one joint reality of Avodas Hashem. When a person moved to Chutz Aretz, it means that now he had to manage completely on his own, living in an area that was empty of any Jews. So he's only surrounded by foreign influence. And now he has to navigate on his own. This is something that Hashem didn't want. This is something that is basically spiritual suicide. Now, when they moved out there, the Mefarshim pointed out, Elimelech was bracing himself for that challenge. He didn't want to drop. He didn't want to drop in his standards. And that's part of the reason why he moved to Sdei Moav, the fields of Moav. He kept outside of the populated areas. He didn't want to become a part of Moav. It was in a temporary kind of way. He's going to camp out in the outskirts of Moav, the sadois, in the fields, until he can come back to Eretz Yisrael. But this was exactly the point. Lemaisi, you're moving out to Moav. You're out of Eretz Yisrael. You're not in that hothouse that just breathes Avodas Hashem. You're in Moav, yeah. You're kind of on the outskirts. You're not mamish living among them yet. It was spiritual suicide. And look, we see what happened. As much as he tried, at the end of the day, both of his children married non-Jews. As we said before, this was Hashem manipulating to bring Rus into the folds. But as it often works is, Hashem has his agendas, and he utilizes people's bad choices to make his agendas happen. So there was mamish a two-way street going. Elimelech's family was in the off direction, and Rus was in the on direction, and Hashem brought the two together. He brought their family. He said, you don't have that strength of character. You don't have what it takes. Okay, I'm going to put you into position to be the one there. Your descent will actually be the cause of Rus's descent, and I will get her. Question?
Yeah. Why did Elimelech choose Moab, knowing history of were there any other nations?
You wouldn't do much better anywhere else. All of the history of all the surrounding nations was pretty bad. And that's why, that's part of why Hashem was so insistent on Eretz Yisrael being so sterile of any foreign nations, because all they had to offer us was bad news. Whatever it would be bad influence. So this is what happened. Vayisulahem noshim ayaviyos. They married Moavi women, Shema Achas Orpa, Veshema Shem Yisrus, Vayesh Vusham Ke'eser Shan. One married Orpa, one married Rus. Okay, now there's a lot of discussion. The simple understanding is, and as it seems clear from the continuation of the Megillah, that they did not convert before marrying them. And we see that the whole story of Rus is her gay Rus, which happened afterwards. There's discussion about why that's so. There's a lot of pilpulim involved. But this is Lamaisa, what happened. And we stress, they were there for 10 years, during which Elimelech died. And then, as the next pasuk tells us, and then also Machlin and Kilyain ended up dying. So it says, Gam, Rashi says, this went in stages. Elimelech died. And then slowly they started being hit financially. They started losing a lot of their assets. Remember, they moved there very, very rich. By the time Naomi came back to Eretz Yisrael, she was a pauper. But this is a classic example. Hashem issued warnings. But the warnings didn't come as an acute slap in the face. They were there for 10 years on the one hand. So what happened? They moved to Moav. They would move to Moav, and all of a sudden, all their assets would collapse. Maybe they would have gotten the message. But Hashem, it's all part of the test. They moved for 10 years. It happened over the course of 10 years. They moved to Moav. For 2 years, everything was fine. This is just for illustrative purposes. Like, I'm just imagining what 2 years, everything was fine. He learned with them. They kept up their standards. Baruch Hashem, it's working. And soon we're going to move back there to Yisrael. But 2 years went by and things started fading a little bit. It's hard to hold up. I remember in Corona how all fired up we were. This message in the home with the kids, and very, very strong in the beginning. And then things start fading and dropping, okay, slowly. And then one enterprise collapses, one of the businesses, which meant business in a lot of different places, one of them collapses. Okay, happens, move on. Things are continuing to drift, and then another business collapses, but 2 years later. And here was the chachma. Are you going to have the sensitivity to get the messages? And unfortunately, they didn't. Until one thing after the next. In the course of those 10 years, Elimelech died, Machlin died, Kilian died, Naomi did learn the message. And this is where we're going to stop for this week. And she grew to the challenge, and okay, we'll see where we'll go from here. I go to Vach.
Thank you very much. Akot Devach Kaltov.
Yeah, good Devach.
She can see what was happening. Just by it, or she already had a thing put into the